This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almacid. Almacid is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almacid. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almacid.com.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme. From serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
Rebecca Park was a 30-year-old Asian woman. She was found back in July 16th of 2003. Actually, it was the following day. It was July 17th of 2003. Rebecca was missing for a period of time, and it was broadcast on the media, and there was a woman that called West detectives and said she was driving one night. It was a hot night, so she had the windows down in her car, and she heard this scream. She said that wasn't a normal, it was like a blood-curdling type scream. So she met detectives, and they stopped at the area where she heard the scream, and they walked from the street level through the woods in a direct line through the woods, and a couple hundred yards or 100 yards, whatever it was, and they discovered Rebecca in that wooded area.
Everyone is susceptible to rape. 1 in 10 rape victims are male. A fifth of trans college students have been sexually assaulted. But according to RAIN, the nation's largest anti-sexual violence group, 90% of all rape victims are women. We have to be careful walking down the street or taking the subway at night or going for an early morning jog. We look over our shoulders when walking home or whenever it's desolate. And society has rules for us. Don't be too drunk, watch your drink at the bar, and don't dress too provocatively. The truth is, it's never anyone's fault but the person who violated the victim. In this episode, we talk about rape, and it may be too much for survivors. So please, if you are a survivor, just take care of yourself. That is the most important thing. And if you've been a survivor of sexual violence, there's a National Rape Crisis Center. You can go there at thercc.org for more information. Philadelphia's Kelly Drive hugs the Schuylkill River. Just across the waterway is West River Drive. Both are part of the Fairmount Park system, which is the largest municipal park in the country. There are secrets hidden in the park, though. Old railroads, streams, trails, horse farms, all intertwined and connecting to another piece of the landscape. And if you were to ask a runner in Philadelphia where they go to run, they'll likely say Kelly Drive or Fairmount Park. For Rebecca Park, the terrain was part of her daily routine until one day in July of 2003. But let's back up a few months. This story starts in April of 2003. I called the two men who knew about this case the best.
Mike Boyle, retired lieutenant from Special Victims, been out about 10 years. It's been a little over 10 years, and now I'm the program director of the Philadelphia Sexual Assault Response Center.
My name's Tom McDevitt. I'm a retired lieutenant for the police department. I was in Special Victims pretty much the whole time Mike was there. In the end, I was in charge of Special Investigations, which handled, you know, all of the sexual assaults in the city and anything else the commissioner wanted us to handle. Any stranger abduction, things like that. That's how I got involved in this case here. I was the lead investigator or in charge of the investigation for Special Victims and worked alongside with Homicide on the Rebecca Park murder.
On a rainy afternoon, we hopped in the car, microphone rolling, to talk about the monster they tried to catch more than a decade ago, the man known as the Fairmount Park Rapist. The first attack happened on April 30th of 2003, along Kelly Drive near Fountain Green Drive.
When did you get the call, or do you remember that first call for the first rape?
It happened around 10:30 at night, and our shift, I had people working day work, and they worked 2 to 10. They were both done, so we weren't called in on it on the first one. And what happened was we picked it up right after that. One of our investigators picked it up.
So just to note, these two, Mike and Tom, are almost like an old married couple. They know what the other one's going to say, and they sometimes talk over each other. They literally can finish each other's sentences.
So it became something that we would look into because essentially we have more time than the line squad has to do investigations.
You see, the line squad, they work 24/7.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They're available to do everything from a routine indecent exposure to a stranger rape. But then SIU would pick up anything that followed that needed more attention or
more concentration. And that's very similar to Homicide and
yeah.
Other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we would get called in on certain cases depending on if it was something we already knew was a pattern, we get called in, or if it was something really, really they wanted us to jump right on, we would jump on it. But that was rare that we would get called in. So we picked it up the next day. And what happened is this young lady, she had a breathing issue. And one of the things that really helped her with the breathing issue was jogging. And so she left her home. And she lived somewhere around, I'm going to say, 16th, 17th, 18th and Pine. So she ran. I mean, she ran all the way down here. She went all the way down to where the bridge comes up here, the Falls River Bridge. And
that's farther up, the Falls
River. Yeah, all the way up.
Yeah.
And that's where she turns around and comes back.
That's a good stretch of breathing.
And she's on her way back. He runs into her. She said she passes him right around here, the stand, the first time he's on a bicycle.
And it was a remarkable bicycle, wasn't it, Tom?
Yeah, it was like a
metallic.
Yeah, metallic bicycle.
Purple in color or something.
He got up to her and he put the knife to her and took her down to where those little three pillars are. And at the time, they were getting ready for the regatta, or the regatta was going on, and it was a couple docks there. He sat down with her on the park bench and police wagon drove by. He just told her to be quiet. And he actually took her over to where the dock was and he pushed her onto the dock after he raped her. And he's throwing stones at her, which was like really strange. And then at some point he's talking to her saying, you have anybody that's going to be worried about you? Why are you out here alone? You know, you shouldn't come out here alone. Kind of gave her a hug and left. Went on his bicycle and drove away, and she was left there on the park bench. And, you know, she went home and reported it. We had a flyer made up. Back then, we didn't report everything to the press. We learned from that. After that is we put a weekly, press release out that had everything to do with, you know, anything that was a stranger we thought that the press would know, put it out.
Public safety issue.
And they would decide what was going to be put out. But yeah, you'll see over there some park benches. And you see the last park bench over there that's facing the water is where he was sitting with her. And the police came from this way over here by the, come from behind there. And they kind of like stopped at the light. And she kind of thought that, wow, man, maybe he would run away. But he didn't get afraid of the police. Just told her to be quiet.
So the police were actually just like monitoring, I guess.
They're just driving through.
They were just on routine patrol.
And then this woman
is sitting here with him and they just think it's nothing unusual. She's not screaming. She's not hollering. They're sitting on the park bench.
They may not have even seen them.
Yeah, they might not have seen them. It's nighttime. We're talking 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
And right over there on the other side where those statues are, they had the docks. And he pushed her down on there, and he's throwing, like, stones at her. Like, it was a little strange. Like, you know, he's throwing stones at her, tell her, stop fighting. And then just drives away on his bicycle.
So there aren't any docks anymore. They're just a few flagpoles and benches. The spot where it happened is adjacent to a major intersection along Kelly Drive, one of the few red lights along the road.
What he had is he had the bicycle hidden back here. He passes her somewhere. Yeah, he passes her on the bicycle, and then he comes over and he hides his bicycle, and then he goes back to catch up to her.
Like running.
Right, and then passes her and comes up behind her and puts the knife to her and brings her over here.
Where did he put the knife up to her?
On her side. Like, he walked up, like, you know, one of these and put his knife to her and just keep walking. So,
and
I mean,
he walked her down there to the docks.
Walk her down over to here.
That's where he rapes her.
He starts talking to her, kind of like, is there anybody here looking for you? Why are you out here by yourself at this time of the night?
He said he had an accent, right? That was kind of put out there. Mm-hmm. Like, he had an accent.
And, like, what are you doing this time of the night? Anybody looking for you? And you should be more careful. You shouldn't come out here by yourself. I mean, he's kind of like not apologizing, but kind of telling her, like, why are you out here by yourself? Putting the blame on her. Like, if you weren't out here by yourself, this wouldn't happen to you. But wasn't afraid when the police pulled up. It wasn't like, oh, my God. Like, he didn't even, like, scream at her, like, not to just be quiet. He spent some time with her, talking to her. Almost like, hey, you shouldn't do this. It's kind of your fault. You're out here by yourself.
Threw stones at her?
When she was on the dock, he's throwing stones at her. Like, he's picking up little rocks and throwing them at her.
Like, after the rape.
Mm-hmm.
And then he
She was fighting.
Her.
Then he hugs her. We have found over the years that these people that do this, you can't go by even like things like, it didn't mean he was compassionate to her. It didn't mean like he felt sorry. People look at that and say, oh yeah, well, you know what? He was feeling sorry. But no, he's not really. I mean, he's kind of blaming her. Look, this wouldn't have happened if you didn't come out here by yourself. So you have to look at it different ways. They used to talk about the Center City rapist and saying, call him the gentleman rapist because he apologized and things like that. But that's not what he was doing. He was really putting the blame on them. Like, this is your fault, not mine.
And punishing her.
And punishing
throwing rocks at her.
Yeah, I mean, so he's, and he, you know.
She tempted him.
Yeah, I mean, if you weren't out here by yourself at night running, this wouldn't happen to you.
But she gave a really good description.
She did.
Yeah, I mean, he was Hispanic, and we always thought that he was Mexican or Central American.
Mm-hmm.
Short in his 20s, he had an earring in his left ear, a widow's peak. I mean, she gave a really, really good description. And again, and later on, as it evolved, everyone gave the same description. I mean, so that was a commonality that was really stunning.
Right.
Aside from the fact that DNA matched.
He's not a big guy.
But
so obviously
he
not
He was described
threatening.
As strong.
Strong.
Yes.
But he's not, like, threatening is, I guess, where I...
Not by stature. Not by stature.
You know, it wouldn't be that if he walked up on you, you'd go, oh, my God, I'm afraid of this guy. This guy's going to hurt me.
He's a monster.
And yeah, he's a monster. Like, it wouldn't be that way. And a lot of times... Most of these people that do these things are not like that. You wouldn't probably even give it second thought if they were walking by. It would be only walking by at this time of the night, you're by yourself, and it's like, okay, I saw this guy twice now. Why is he behind me? But most of the time, you're not giving these people a second thought. I mean, when you look at the ones over history that have happened, like our Center City rapist, Troy Graves, nobody ever even called him in as a tip. The only person that ever said he looked like the composite was his girlfriend's daughter, who was, what, 8 or 9 at the time, Mike? And she said, oh, Troy, that looks like Troy, the bad man. That looks like Troy. And the girlfriend said, oh, no, that's a bad man. Troy's not a bad man. Nobody ever called him in as a tip. He was the nice guy.
In the late 90s, a man deemed the Center City rapist terrorized women around Philadelphia. In total, 6 women were raped, including Penn student Shannon Schieber, who was found naked, raped, and strangled inside her apartment. A man named Troy Graves was caught in Colorado. With DNA evidence, eventually Graves admitted to all the rapes and the murder, and he's now serving life in prison.
It's like, the psychology of this is, I know they say it's over power and control and everything, but it's hard to wrap
I think it's
your...
more than that.
Yeah, you have to, like, wrap your mind around it because it's so, it's just hard to understand.
And his first victim, he liked her so much, he had such a conversation where he was going to put an ad in a newspaper.
He wanted to date her.
To date her.
He spent hours with her.
Yeah.
Hours with her.
This is how, like, you know, when you talk about the psychology, they're kind of strange. I mean, and when he was out in Colorado, the one, he rearranged all the things on her refrigerator. You know, you have the alphabets. He rearranged things on there and wrote stuff and, you know, and kind of talked to them about their life and things like that. It was really psychology strange. But in the second breath, the one girl that was out there, the one woman was a black belt in karate. She said when he got on her, he grabbed her like this from behind. They fell down between the bed and the wall. And she said his heart wasn't beating fast at all. And he said, if you don't stop, I will kill you. She said, I just knew he'd kill me. So he goes from, I'll kill you, to like, oh, you know, you're sorry about your husband and where your kids at. I mean, it's
very strange.
It's really, and they're really all different. Like when you look at them, like every one of them is different.
Like all know, the you're saying all the suspects.
All the suspects, serial rapists, and they all have their own fantasy, and you know that's what they're out there for because they have that fantasy, and then sometimes the fantasy of the last rape will push them through till the next one, and it could be years. Or they get scared sometimes, and I almost got caught, so you stop. You know, the old thinking that when we were doing this. Was that if you didn't do anything for a couple of years, you'd probably be either dead in or in jail. But now with history, with all the people that are being caught with genealogy, it's not happening to someone. I'm just stopped. You know, they find some other thing, they get them excited, but they stop, which is scary because you just know they're out there.
Yeah.
When we were at the Center City Rapist, we brought that renowned psychologist, professor and psychiatrist. He kind of told us that it's long as they got the thrill and they'll have the thrill from the last thing they did, it may take them years before they don't need it, or they're finding something else to get that thrill. Yeah. These are predators. They're looking for victims, so they're hunting, and they plan it. It's not like, oh, let me do the spur of the moment. Oh, I saw this girl over here. Oh, I got so excited. Let me jump on a raper. That's not what they do. I mean, these people actually are planning things. They're cunning. Now, you see the bridge up there?
Yeah, that's...
That's how far she jogged, all the way to that bridge and turned around. He caught her on the way back when she was exhausted.
So you're going to go over the Falls Bridge and then check out?
I was following this to 3900.
Conshohocken.
Rebecca Park was a 30-year-old Asian woman.
This is Sergeant Bob Kohlmeier. He's with Philadelphia's Homicide Unit, but actually runs special investigations where he's tasked at looking at unsolved and high-profile cases. He was one of the original investigators on scene.
She was a medical student, and she was also spending time with the military reserves. And, yeah, she held some kind of rank in the military reserves. She was busy. I believe she was in the Philadelphia area by herself. I think family weren't in the immediate area. And she was really making something of herself as far as her studies and whatever work she was involved in.
Old articles from the Washington Post, the LA Times, and the Inquirer illustrate who this petite, brilliant, powerful woman was. She was described as bright and energetic. Her friend Martha told a reporter she had endless energy, recalling how when they studied, Rebecca would actually pace with books in her hands. She was always moving, her friend said. Rebecca also loved the Cheesecake Factory, watching South Park, and she'd visit family in California and then travel with friends a lot. But most importantly, she just loved life. Martha told the paper, she loved being around people and helping people. She was the first person to give me unconditional love, and she was like that with everyone. Rebecca was from Maryland and went to the University of Maryland studying psychology and biology. And as a way to pay for school, she joined the Army Reserves, where she went through boot camp training, worked her way up to second lieutenant. Following her time in school, she worked at the Walter Reed Army Institute of Research for 3 years and then moved up here to attend Philadelphia's College of Osteopathic Medicine. Rebecca had an older brother and was only about 2 hours away from her parents in Maryland. She lived in Wynwood near her school.
She goes on a jog.
It's around 4 p.m., July 13th, 2003. Rebecca tells her boyfriend she's going for her daily run.
And it's kind of a scenic run. There's some old trolley trails, Fairmount Park System trolley trails, and there's a beautiful bridge, a brick bridge, that you don't see that construction today. And so I could see why runners would choose that particular area. And it wasn't far from where Rebecca was living. There's a stable down there towards the end of her run, I guess, where, you know, she would stop, make that a point, you know, to stop there and then turn around and head back home.
The next day, a Monday, Rebecca never shows up for her rounds at Bryn Mawr Hospital where she was working. She never missed work. On Tuesday, her boyfriend and father reported her disappearance to the police.
She becomes missing.
Well, her boyfriend comes home.
Yeah.
And finds her not there. And
she reports her missing.
He reports her missing. Like, she hasn't come home. I don't know where she's at.
Southwest detectives takes it as a missing person. They look around, nothing.
When officers get to her apartment, the books are still open. There's a highlighter still sitting in the crease of the pages.
It was broadcast on the media. Initially, when a missing person is reported, it's reported to the uniform district, and then the detective that covers that uniform district is assigned, and then there's steps that they have to take as far as investigating a missing person. And one of the steps is notifying a citywide, putting out like a citywide report and notification.
Thursday, July 17th, 2003.
There was a woman that called West detectives and said, I don't know if this is significant or not. And the reason I'm saying this is because a lot of people have that thought in their back of their head on any case, you know, in the back of their mind that I don't know if it's significant. I don't think I'm going to bother call. Well, this woman called. She was driving one night. It was a hot night, so she had the windows down in her car, and she heard this scream. And she said that wasn't a normal, it was like a blood-curdling type scream. So she met detectives, and they stopped at the area where she heard the scream.
Right here.
It was right here.
There's a path right there, that path right front of that car.
Yeah.
There's a path that goes there.
Into the woods there.
And that's where it was, right down there.
And they walked from the street level through the woods in a direct line through the woods and a couple hundred yards or 100 yards, whatever it was, and they discovered Rebecca.
They go down there and they find her body down there. It's right at the bottom of that entrance. There's a little creek right there. And then a couple days later, after she went missing, a guy is riding his bike down there and he sees somebody down there playing with the water. And the guy had a bicycle, so they thought it might have been him coming back or right around that time. So that was the only person we saw or anybody saw somebody else. But her body was found down there, and it was decaying enough that you could smell it all the way up here, up to the side of the road.
Where Rebecca was found, obviously it was a wooded area, and it was off of a trail, a footpath trail. And that footpath trail led to a wider jogging path. But there was a small stream of water nearby, and there was a shallow depression area where she was found. And she was partially covered with leaves and some other forest debris, some branches, twigs, some of that nature.
She was
found face down over a log, and like I said, there was other debris, forest debris in the area, but the position and the way she was found indicated right away a sexual assault.
But since it was on the other side of the park, over by West Philadelphia and Wynwood, they weren't sure if it was connected to the Fairmount Park rapist at first.
The homicide unit had known about the opposite side of the river as sexual assault, but because it was a little bit of a distance, a few miles, we looked at our case as an individual case at first.
Yeah, and what happened was when they did the DNA on her, it came back a match to our first incident, and that's when, you know, everything hit the fan.
What investigators knew, though, Rebecca fought, and she fought hard.
That's very likely. Mm-hmm. I think that's what happened in Shannon Sheever's case.
Exactly.
Because he wasn't typically a murderer, because he said, I will kill you if I have to.
Right.
But he didn't want to, I don't think. But Sheever fought. In fact, she screamed. And the police were called, as a matter of fact. But they didn't take the door. But he had already left by that time.
Mm-hmm.
And she was already dead. But when she screamed, that threw him into a panic. That's when he choked her to death. And I think that's probably what happened with Park.
Yeah, and over the years, the people that we've seen most of the time, that had the most injuries were the people that fought.
Yep.
I know people always say, oh, you know, fight and all that. And we used to say, look, if you're a fighter, That's on you. You make that decision.
Yeah.
And but if you think you're going to go, if you think you're going to go to a class and learn a couple things and you're going to protect yourself, yeah, you're probably going to get hurt. I mean, yep, the people that we've seen over the years that got the most injuries were the ones that fought the most. And I agree with Mike. I think that she put up a fight. She started screaming, and he just took it to her to get her to stop screaming.
When someone at KYW News Radio goes out to cover a story, there's a lot that just doesn't make it on the radio.
I cannot believe this is going on.
In a world of lazy arguments, it's one of the laziest.
I'm Jay Scott Smith, and I talk to my colleagues about everything you didn't get to hear on the air on the podcast, The Rundown, from KYW News Radio. Listen free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's all hands on deck. Homicide detectives had the case of Rebecca Park, but they were still working hand in hand with the Special Victims Unit. They scoured the area.
When we were out here, Tommy and I went out here. Christ, we even walked across the railroad bridge over at the Hunting Park.
Yeah, you can see, get around all over.
We were trying to figure out, where's this guy coming from? You know, it's... you know, we did a lot of... We wasted a lot of time, I guess, but... No time is wasted.
Well, because you know what?
You're really just fishing.
You don't know. Right, yeah.
This park here, it's not like other places, like, you know, okay, yeah, something happened and you're like, okay, what? Why was that person here?
You can get lost in this park easily.
But yes, this park here, you easily, like, you're in West Philly here. Like Mike said, we were over that way. We ended up in Northwest Philly, over by the bridge. And if you're in Center City, we're the first ones, you're in Center City in North Central. From this park on a bicycle, you can be at any almost different sections of the city.
And just a few months later, another strike. It was October 25th, 2003. A 37-year-old woman went for a run along West River Drive when she runs by the Falls Bridge. He has a knife. She fights. He stabs her.
She put up a fight, and he was stabbing her, trying to kill her. Now, you know, he's going to use that knife on her. She had cuts on her hands. She had a couple, you know, cuts on her chest. But if she don't put up her hands, that knife goes into her chest. He probably kills her, too. So depending on, and then the last one, up in the Northeast, he really didn't. She didn't put up a fight, and he didn't hurt her. So, you know, it really, each one, like we talked earlier, every one of them is different. I mean, somebody might run away if you put up a fight. In this case, the next one, if it wasn't the cars coming by, he probably would have killed her, because she was putting up a fight, and he was going to stop her from putting up a fight. But then the cars were coming; he didn't want to get caught. Self-preservation come in, and he took off.
A good Samaritan, a man, stops, sees what's happening. The woman then gets into his car, and they drive straight to the hospital. She's badly wounded, but she survives the attack.
So, was she running? Do you know this way or that way?
I don't know.
Okay, and if you know the Good Samaritan was going, which direction?
This way.
So he was coming up from what? From the city, basically.
Yeah, up from the city. Yeah.
And he took off back the other way. He had his bicycle hidden.
Oh, you're saying the rapist went back the other way?
Yeah.
That's so bizarre.
Toward the city.
Towards the city, but there's another section over there. Right. You can shoot over, and you're another section of the city down
because
there.
Because I read a thing about how Rebecca Park.
He was familiar with the area. There was one. There was only one guy that was stopped by a railroad police guy in the park down around near where the art museum was that we were never able to find. And we always thought, you know, probably out of all the suspects we had, he was a guy that we would like to have stopped, but we've never been able to find him. They had a name. We're not even sure if it was a real name, but we did track down that he was stopped in California. On a pet stop, auto stop at one point, but we never were able to find him.
Was that a tip that came in about him, or?
One of the cops came up and said, "Look, I had stopped this guy. He had a bicycle, kind of resembled your composite, you know." And it was after the homicide, so we said, "Okay, let's find this guy because we're looking for people, you know." I do remember like really being hot? I wanted that guy. You know, of all the people in the investigation, that guy won it because I didn't never found him. We never found him.
And I wanted before him. The last job.
Before the last one. Job.
4 years pass. Detectives post flyers all over Kelly Drive. Some tips come in, but there's nothing solid. And then on August 11th of 2007, a woman who was home to take care of a sick relative, to take a break, clear her mind, went for a walk in Pennypack Park.
She took a walk in the park, and this guy jumps from the bushes, drags her in the bushes, and rapes her. So that, you know, that's like, man, really? When that first happened, we talked about it. We said, oh, that, you know, this is probably not related. This is too far away. But let's see what the DNA says. I went to vacation then. Tommy calls me. He says, hey, guess what? It's the same guy. We would have never, that one we would not have linked.
Yeah, we had asked people, like anybody took pictures in here because there was a show going on. They had like a little stage and it was a show going on at the time. I think she stopped at the show for a little bit and turned around and walked away. I was heading back.
Mm-hmm.
And did he say anything to her?
I think he had a heavy accent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what he said to her, I don't recall.
And then, but there was no weapon used, so there was no knife or anything.
Just physical force.
Did he say how he...
By the way, whether she pulled it down or how it happened, but it exposed part of his chest and there were some spots on his chest that looked like maybe they were... birthmarks or maybe a scar.
He was wearing a shirt from Zally's supermarket, and we tracked them down.
We went to different, you know, he sent people out to Jersey. There's not that many Zally's around, but there are more than you think. Yeah. I never even heard of it before.
That's like a ShopRite, okay. Zally ShopRite.
Yeah, it's a small, you know, a family-owned
And the shirt said Zally's.
If somebody had an Acme shirt, like, good luck.
Yeah, right.
But, like, this is a smaller...
It said Zally's, yeah, and the thing was...
He might have picked that up at a thrift store. Who knows?
We sent letters and the composites to every employee of Zally's and previous employees of Zally's. I asked them for any information to somebody they made that resemble this, or they know they had a shirt, you know, even maybe if it's a boyfriend of yours or something. And I think we sent thousands of letters and maybe got a couple of responses back that just said, no, I don't know anything. But we went as far as like going to Zally's and getting their employee records and mailing everything out there.
Both Tom and Mike are retired, but they do still have hands in their investigation.
We don't forget these cases. We kind of incorporate them into ourselves. Mm-hmm. And it would be very gratifying for us on a personal and professional level to know that it was brought in.
We did everything. I think that, like Mike said, one thing would be is that, like, you know, we really put our heart and soul into these things, no matter what that happens. But I can tell you that the public today thinks that this guy's been caught, and they really have no idea. We would go out every year on the anniversary of these, and we talk to people all the time.
We'd hear cadets out here.
And we put up the posters, and people would say, oh, we thought he was caught because we haven't heard about it. And that's the problem with these things. It's like if you don't hear about it, it's out of sight, out of mind. If you ask most of the cops that are out here, some of them are going to say, I don't even know anything about it. Or if they know it, they're going to be, oh, we thought he was caught. We never heard anything. I remember us trying to, like, do things with the press back in the day. And it would always be like, listen, can we put something else out? Like, do you have anything new? I don't have anything new, but I'm hoping to get something new.
Yeah.
And they would say, well, we can't do it then. It was like, I'm like, oh, man, come on. Until you see somebody 30 years later and you realize how they're still traumatized and how it affected their life, you don't really realize that. You don't realize that these things are affecting these people for the rest of their life. Not just this 5 minutes that this happened or a little bit of time that we're working on it. It affects them for the rest of their life. And I can tell you, I know that these victims are still, this still bothers them. I mean, all these years later, it still bothers them. And to give them some kind of closure where they're not looking over their shoulder again, where they had to change their life, maybe not jogged anymore, to be able to give that back to them, I think would be really a great thing. And then the other part of it is that we don't realize, like we talk about the victim in these cases. What about their families? Their families have lived through this as well. These families have suffered. They've been through the whole thing as well. And, you know, how it means to the families. Like, I'm sure if we went back and talked to the families or the boyfriend, they're like, I wish I could have protected them. It's bothered me my whole life. And I think that the victims would appreciate the fact that we've never forgotten and we never stopped working on it.
If you know anything about the Fairmount Park rapist, you can call Philadelphia Police at their tip line, 215-686-TIPS. Gone Cold is a KYW News Radio original podcast. You can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Gone Cold Philly. And you can also join our Facebook group and talk about the cases. Just search Facebook for Gone Cold Philly. I'm Kristen Johansson. You can find me on Twitter at Kristen Johansson. I make Gone Cold with Tom Rickard, and you can follow him at TEERICK. Thanks for listening.